The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Bill Myers Show.
And from what I understand, according to the bumper rotation, let it rain. We'll finally be getting some rain back in the forecast, if not late tonight, into tomorrow and through the weekend. A little bit of wetness. We'll get back to your phone calls here in a little bit. I wanted to get together with Dr. Jane Orient, MD, one of my favorite medical brains. I've been speaking with her for years. She's president of the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, AAPSonline.org. And you're also involved with Physicians or Doctors for Preparedness. What is that group here, doctor? Tell me a little bit more about that, please.
Doctors for Disaster Preparedness, ddponline.org.
Oh.
It's been around since the early 1980s. It's preparedness for all types of disasters, including nuclear war, but all kinds of other disasters, too.
I noticed that what you sent out from that group the other day is quite interesting about a nuclear drill in Schenectady. And that was what, a little bit earlier this month is when that happened. Could you give us a little perspective on that? What happened?
Well, they had a drill, and they said, oh, it's only a drill. Don't be worried. And if there's a nuclear event, and well, there won't be, you know, just get inside, stay inside, and stay tuned, which is really very superficial and actually harmful advice.
Really?
There are a lot of things that people could know that are simple, can probably do it in a couple of minutes. It could save many, many lives. But the government doesn't tell us about those things.
I know that it wasn't something that we were going to talk about, because I wanted to ask you about the RFK thing, and we'll get to that in just a moment. But I think that's too important. I was surprised the other day, and I was just even saying on the air a few minutes ago that I'm surprised at the, well, I'm not surprised, but I'm happy with so much transparency coming out of the Trump administration. They seem to be getting information out in a fire hose as quickly as they can about various issues, including last night's tragic air crash in D.C. The one thing I don't buy, though, is that there was nothing at all to the drone sightings on the East Coast, especially the ones coming in from the sea. I think there's a little bit of trying to tamp down discussion about that, which gets into preparedness for conflict, including nuclear war. And there's a physician friend of mine, Dr. Stephen Greenleaf, and he's also an attorney. And he told me that nuclear war is considerably more survivable than people think. And not that I want nuclear war, and God forbid we ever have that. You think we should be doing a little bit more prep on that, you know, kind of other than the duck and cover that we all experienced as kids
back
in the 50s and 60s?
Absolutely. For one thing, what he's saying is that it is survivable. You will probably survive at first. You may die later because nobody's going to work. Nobody's doing the things that need to be done to keep society functioning. But you will not die when the bomb hits unless you're in the zone of destruction.
Or in a serious fallout zone, I would imagine, if you're getting a lot of that going on.
If there's a ground burst and there's fallout. But you can see fallout. It looks like grit or sand. Mm-hmm. And you can take cover. You can even build a core shelter inside your house with anything massive, water, boxes of books to put mass between you and the fallout, which decays quite quickly over a couple days.
So even if you have a big library, you take the books and you make huge, thick stacks all around you, and the books then take the absorption or the brunt of the radiation and prevent it from getting to you if you're inside the core of that, so to speak, right?
Yeah, anything massive cuts down on radiation. I mean, lead may be best. Bricks, sand, water, anything massive between you and the source of radiation will protect you.
If you ended up having radiation, you know, coming into, let's say, Southern Oregon, if we had something coming from over in Europe and Asia, let's say, something had happened and big serious fallout, would it be helpful to even get into the foundation of your home? I mean, we don't have basements for the most part here in Southern Oregon. Our frost lines don't go that long or that deep. But we do have foundations in most of the homes that that we may live in. Would that be a good alternative if you don't have a fallout shelter, so to speak, something temporary?
Yeah, anything massive. Dig a trench and put a lid on it and put your water supply on top of it. Anything massive. And it does not need to be for the rest of your life. It needs to be until the fallout dies down, which goes by a 7-10 rule. Then in 7 hours, it'll be 1/10 of what it was to begin with, and so on.
7 hours, it goes to 1/10, and then another 7 hours, it's a tenth of that, so it's 1/100th of a watt.
1/100th.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So
and
the math.
Don't panic over really low doses of radiation. People say, "Oh, you're going to die. You're going to get cancer," but really, they never give the doses. And with a low dose, it may actually be protective. But anyway, we have done away with most of our instruments for measuring it, and everybody thinks, oh, no level of radiation is safe, so just plan to die.
What do you think about potassium iodide? Good thing to stock?
Oh, yeah, I don't see why people shouldn't have it. We're probably all iodine deficient. But, you know, a couple drops of a saturated solution of potassium iodide would block your thyroid, so in case the food or water is contaminated with radioactive iodine, you protect your thyroid against taking in the radioactive stuff.
All right, very good. What's the website? I guess I'll send people to the website and for the preparedness tips. I imagine you have plenty there, right?
Yes, DDP, that's Doctors for Disaster Preparedness, ddponline.org.
Very good. Hey, thanks for, like I said, this was not what I had planned on talking about, but since you were here and I noticed your fallout thing and everyone seems to be trying to tamp down any concerns about nuclear, and I don't think that's wise because you just never know what will happen. Fortunately, here in Southern Oregon, I don't know if you're familiar with Joel Skousen, but he wrote a book called Strategic Relocation. Southern Oregon, in our particular area, is considered pretty safe from most attack. We don't have a lot of military attacks, and most of the prevailing winds would take fallout around us. So it stands us in good stead, but we should still know, you know, what to do in case of something like that.
Well, have food and water and medicines that you might need that you might be able to get.
All right. Let's shift it back then. We're going to turn, do a 180 degree and go into yesterday's RFK hearings. And first thing I'm going to do for you, Doctor, I don't know how many clips you heard, but our brilliant, amazing U.S. Senator Ron Wyden went after him. And so we'll play a little bit of that clip yesterday and maybe get your thoughts.
You have spent years pushing conflicting stories about vaccines. You say one thing, and then you say another. In your testimony today under oath, you denied that you were anti-vaccine. But during a podcast interview in July of 2023, you said, quote, no vaccine is safe and effective. In your testimony today, in order to prove you're not anti-vax, you note that all your kids are vaccinated. But in a podcast in 2020, you said, and I quote, you would do anything, pay anything, to go back in time and not vaccinate your kids. Mr. Kennedy, all of these things cannot be true. So, are you lying to Congress today when you say you are pro-vaccine? Or did you lie on all those podcasts? We have all of this on tape, by the way.
Yeah, Senator, as you know, because it's been repeatedly debunked, that statement that I made on the Lex Fridman podcast was a fragment of the statement. He asked me, and anybody who actually goes and looks at that podcast and will see this, he asked me, are there vaccines that are safe and effective? And I said to him, some of the live virus vaccines are. And I said, there are no vaccines that are safe and effective, and I was going to continue for every person. Every medicine has people who are sensitive to them, including vaccines.
Right. So
he interrupted me at that point. I've corrected it many times, including on national TV. You know about this, Senator Wyden, so bringing this up right now is dishonest.
So there we go. That was Senator Wyden with RFK Jr. yesterday. Doctor, from your sounds of it, is it just me or does it sound like most of Congress is bought off on the pharmaceutical vaccine regime? Am I wrong about that?
Oh, I think most of them are. I think most of the medical profession is. I think the medical schools are, universities are. It was a court that said that no vaccine is perfectly safe. And that's why we have to have this compensation program. It's inevitably unsafe in some people. I mean, there's no drug that is 100% safe or 100% effective.
But I think the one difference, though, is that there's only one drug or one class of drug out there that has absolutely no liability to be able to be safe and effective, and that's the vaccine world.
The manufacturers were losing so many cases over brain damage from the pertussis vaccine, they're going to stop making it. So the government protected them and said, oh, we'll put a tax on every dose of vaccine. And if people are hurt, then they can claim some compensation, which is, you know, how do you compensate somebody for a lifelong of mental disability? But and you know, it's very difficult to get the compensation. It's very, very stingy. But all the same, it is simply a fact that nothing is 100% safe or effective.
Yeah.
And we're only now beginning to find out about the vaccines. And I think very Senator Ron Johnson presented the documents that were finally obtained for manufacturers under Freedom of Information Act request about side effects. And they were all redacted, just black or white pages. So they're concealing evidence that the public has the right to know. If they're going to make a decision about risks and benefits, they need to know what the risks are.
Because otherwise, how can you have any informed consent? You just can't.
Exactly.
Otherwise. And especially, how can there be informed consent if you can't really know the risks, but at the same time, you're being forced to, you know, take these medications that have their liability severely curtailed or removed? But
yeah,
you have, but you have to take a vaccine in order to keep your job or send your kid to school.
It's under emergency use authorization.
Okay, well, what was that? I'm sorry, I talked over you. I apologize for that. Where were you going with that? Go ahead.
It's illegal to mandate that people take something without informed consent that's under emergency use authorization. These vaccines were not approved, fully approved.
Mm-hmm.
They were just said, well, this is an emergency, so we're going to let you use them.
Are they still under that emergency use authorization, or have they now been approved? Do you know?
I think community, one version of the Pfizer vaccine has supposedly been approved. I'm not sure that you can get it yet in the U.S. So, but still, I don't think it's really ethical, and it shouldn't be legal to force somebody to take any drug to which he does not consent.
It's really interesting. You know, nobody's perfect. And I don't know, but your overall impression of RFK Jr., like I said, they continue to attack him mostly for the vaccines. And do you know how much money goes into congressional coffers from manufacturers of medications? Do we know?
I don't. I'm not sure anybody knows. I think figures have been presented, and it's a huge amount. But I don't know exactly what it is.
Okay. Is he a threat to the vaccine regime?
Well, he's a threat to dishonesty and corruption in these regulatory agencies that are supposed to be looking out for us.
Hmm.
I mean, everybody's for safe products, but if the people who are regulating them have a conflict of interest and they have tons of money and they've got a revolving door, when they leave the agency, they can go work for the pharmaceutical company. You really can't trust them. And I think they have betrayed our trust.
Okay.
And to demand transparency is very important. And I think that's what Kennedy is doing. If all of the evidence is, as they say, it's all for safety and effectiveness, then why are they so worried?
Interesting. Speaking of the conflicts, though, Senator Warren ended up getting into it with RFK Jr. about what she looked at as potential legal conflicts. And I wanted to share a little bit of that and maybe get your reaction, because, you know, she may have a point. I just want to be fair about this, okay?
So I want to talk more about money. I'm looking at your paperwork right now. In the past 2 years, you've raked in $2.5 million from a law firm called Wisner Baum. You go online, you do commercials to encourage people to sign up with Wisner Baum to join lawsuits against vaccine makers. And for everyone who signs up, you personally get paid. And if they win their case, you get 10% of what they win. So if you bring in somebody who gets $10 million, you walk away with $1 million. Now, you just said that you want the American people to know you can't be bought. Your decisions won't depend on how much money you could make in the future. You won't go to work for a drug company after you leave HHS. But you and I both know there's another way to make money. So, Mr. Kennedy, will you also agree that you won't take any compensation from any lawsuits against drug companies while you are secretary and for 4 years afterwards?
Well, I'll certainly commit to that while I'm secretary. But I do want to clarify something because you're making me sound like a shill. I put together that case. I did the Science Day presentation to the judge on that case to get it into court,
Mr.
the Daubert hearing.
Mr. Kennedy, it's just a really simple question. You've taken in $2.5 million. I want to know if you will commit right now that not only will you not go to work for drug companies, you won't go to work suing the drug companies and taking your rake out of that while you're a secretary and for 4 years after. It's just...
I'll commit to not taking any fees from drug companies while I'm secretary.
No, I'm asking about fees from suing drug companies. Will you agree not to do that?
You're asking me to not sue drug companies.
No,
and I'm not going to agree to that,
Senator. You can sue drug companies as much as you want.
I'm not going to agree to not sue drug companies or anybody.
So let's do a quick count here of how, as Secretary of HHS...
Okay, yeah. Well, this kind of cut it at that point just because of time. Was that a fair question to ask him on this one, Dr. Orion? Because I'm thinking, all right, yeah, you know, if he's making money from ginning up lawsuits against drug companies, that is... I mean, that is a thing, is it not? Isn't it something to be concerned, given the fact that he would be on that other side? What do you think?
Well, I think that this happens throughout the country, especially in the environmental movement, that there are all kinds of people who are instigating lawsuits and getting money if the lawsuit prevails. Of course, if you're making a lawsuit against a drug company, I mean, you're going to lose if you don't have a good case.
Right.
And if you do have a good case and somebody has been injured, should they not be able to sue? So I think it's a complicated question. I don't think that's a reason not to confirm him as secretary.
Okay. All right. I just thought I would bring that up. Do you think that overall he would be a good secretary at HHS, in spite of the flaws? As long as he stays away from environmental law and things like that, I'll probably be okay.
Right. Well, I disagree with him about so many things. I don't really have a good concept of how he feels about the administration of Medicare and Medicaid, but I think it is of utmost importance that people not be lied to about products that they're being forced to take, or which drug companies are making tons of money and purchasing Congress and regulatory agencies.
Hmm. I talked with Dr. Jeffrey Barkey last week, and he wrote a book called Unavoidably Unsafe. I don't know if you're aware of that book, but I had him on the program. And he was about reconsidering the childhood vaccine schedule. And RFK Jr. didn't seem to really talk about being in favor of modifying that. Is that just kind of, you know, in essence, do you have to lie to Congress to get confirmed, you know, on this issue? Is that where you have to be? I understand why people are thinking, hey, he's talking out of both sides of his mouth. What do you think?
I don't know. The childhood vaccine schedule has become like sacred dogma, and you dare not question it. I mean, it was an Oregon physician, I think, Paul Thomas.
Yes.
Who lost his license because he published a study of unvaccinated versus vaccinated children. It turns out the unvaccinated ones are so much healthier, have so many fewer chronic illnesses, and we can't allow that.
Yeah, I mean, that just goes against every – it's like the medical religion, the medical and drug industry religion here, that vaccines are the way to health.
And vaccines should not be a sacred cow. Every medical intervention has risks and benefits, and we need to know honestly what they are.
Well, it's kind of like even Ozempic, right? Everyone's taking these semaglutide drugs that are very expensive, but – they're helping people lose weight, and they were there for I guess they were formed as or created as diabetes medications, right? Weren't they created for that? But then they found out people would lose weight.
But then they're being used far more widespread uses, and they do have bad side effects.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, yeah, you can lose weight, but then it also paralyzes the gut for some people, and then they have trouble.
Right. Yeah. And if you have to have an anesthetic, you may get aspiration pneumonia and die.
Yeah. Just, you know, in other words, what you're saying then is that including vaccines, including all the other drugs, there are choices and there are consequences, right? And we need to know about all the consequences potentially.
That's right. And I think that Kennedy's stand for truth and transparency is vitally important. And I'm willing to overlook all the things that I disagree with him on, because I think this is of overriding importance.
Do you think that drugs should go off the ability to be advertised commercially like they've been for a number of years? Do you think that worked or not?
I think that we're the only place in the world that does that. I think that it really is a bad thing.
Is there a way to keep them advertising, keep the advertising? Now, I know I have a dog in the fight because, of course, we live on advertising, but not on pharmaceutical advertising. But I know that cable news sure lives on pharmaceutical advertising. We know that. Is there a way to make it better?
That the part of the thing is that if you dare say anything bad about a drug or a vaccine, you lose your advertising.
That's right.
Which may destroy you, or probably will. So I think that this type of corruption or this type of disincentive to telling the truth is very dangerous.
No. All right. Doctor, I appreciate you coming on here. And aapsonline.org, I'll also link to the disaster preparedness site that you were talking about. Always interesting talking with you. And we'll have you back. Thank you. Okay. Dr. Jane Orient, MD, and she's the president, or executive director, rather, of the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, aapsonline.org.
This is Brent with Home and Built Deck and Fence. Many customers in the Rogue Valley ask why winter is a great time for deck, fence, and siding projects.
You're waking up with the Bill Myers Show.
Open phones on Conspiracy Theory Thursday. I want to go through some more emails here, too. 770-5633, 770-KMED. All right, we can get that on after news. But Todd writes me this morning on the pharmaceutical dollars. I was talking with Dr. Jane Orient, MD, and I've been trying to get a bead on this, and it's difficult to kind of get totals on how the Congress critters are rated. Some sites will ignore some contributions, and others will overemphasize. But Todd writes me and says, hey, Bill, to your question about politicians receiving money from drug companies, I saw in the news that Senator Bernie Sanders got the most of any, over $1.4 million. Well, that's really interesting, because I have Crazy Bernie's bite here yesterday, too, about, well, so he gets $1.4 million, and how much is Children's Defense Fund getting?
You have started a group called the Children's Health Defense. You're the originator. Right now, as I understand it, on their website, they are selling what's called onesies. These are little things, clothing for babies. One of them is titled Unfaxed, Unafraid. Next one, and they're sold for $26 a piece, by the way. Next one is No Vax, No Problem. Now, you're coming before this committee and you say you're pro-vaccine. Just want to ask some questions. And yet your organization is making money selling a child's product to parents for $26, which casts fundamental doubt on the usefulness of vaccines. Can you tell us now that you will, now that you are pro-vaccine, that you're going to have your organization take these products off the market?
Senator, I have no power over that organization. I'm not part of it. I resigned from the board.
That was just a few months ago. You founded that.
The one thing.
You certainly have power. You can make that call. Are you supportive of this?
I've had nothing to do with
leadership.
Are you
supportive of these onesies?
I'm supportive of vaccines.
Are you supportive of this clothing, which is militantly anti-vaccine?
I am supportive of vaccines.
Okay, all right, so you have to be supportive of the vaccines. And are you supportive of these onesies? Of these onesies? I would have loved to have had Senator Ron Wyden have that, because with the lisp, that would make it. Do you support these onesies? I know. I can't help myself. But well, let's see. So Bernie gets $1.4 million from Big Pharma, according to that news report that Todd mentions here. And Children's Health Defense, that would be the equivalent of 53,846 anti-vaccine onesies that he's raking RFK Jr. over the coals for. I don't think they've sold that many, but I could be wrong. I mean, maybe there are, 54,000 onesies, those scurrilous, how would you call it? Because they're, reducing faith in vaccines. And you just can't do that. Amazing. I still say that it would be the best thing in the world to have every congressman, every senator have NASCAR jackets, and on their suits should be the logos of every of all the major companies, whether it's military, industrial. You know, here's your donation for here's your donation from AIPAC for Israel. Here's your big pharma deal. Here's your everything. The drug companies. Here's Raytheon, Boeing. I mean, just all the rest of it. And so at least we'll know where they're coming from as they talk with RFK Jr. and others. I can't wait to see how they're going to grill Tulsi today. We'll see. I guess it's supposed to happen today. I think it's today, right? I know Cash Patel is up there, too. Anyway, it is Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Hi, good morning. Who's this?
Bill, it's your friend Brad. Good morning to you.
Brad, what are you thinking?
Hey, just because it's out in the open doesn't mean it's not a conspiracy.
Sure.
President Trump just got through making remarks about the air collision. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that he spent a lot of time talking about was this, how the effect of DEI on the quality of federal hires, especially when it comes to really high-performance positions like air traffic controllers. And this is a man who has been flying in private aircraft for 40 years that I know of. I mean, in some of the most congested airspace in the United States there in Manhattan, where he was a developer, had his own fixed-wing aircraft, had his own helicopters. This is a man who is very, very familiar with the impacts of air traffic control on congestion. He is going to get to the bottom of this and find out what happened.
Is there evidence, though, that the air traffic controllers were faulty? Because the way that helicopter pilots, even I had a couple of military guys call me earlier this morning. They're saying, hey, that's the helicopter. That's on the helicopter pilot going higher than they were supposed to be going. That's the way they're coming from it. And yeah. But now this is not how the story is going to be spun. I just wanted to share this with you. OK. And I got this from Newsbytes app. And here we go. Trump paused hiring of critical air traffic controllers days before Washington crash. All right. So remember, days before Washington crash. So you have to understand, Brad, that already they're spinning the narrative that it was Trump's fault that the helicopter and the airline crashed.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
I just want to warn you. Okay.
What? When's the last time you can remember a collision with the United States military aircraft and a commercial air carrier? I can't remember it. I can't remember the last time that happened.
There may have been, but it's rare. Actually, a collision, mid-air collisions are rare anyway. But the one thing that is happening, if you go over to certain airports, in fact, let me go to, I was reading a story on revolver.news. Let's see if I can find this. Oh, here it is. The inside scoop about how COVID and affirmative action policy gutted aviation safety. It's a really interesting article, and I'm going down through here. They're talking about Damian Campbell, and this was the accident. Let's see if I can find it. A recent accident in Houston, the latest noteworthy instance in what a major New York Times investigation over the summer determined to be an alarming pattern of safety lapses and near misses in the skies and on the runways in the USA. And the Times reported that these safety lapses and near misses occurred as a result of human error, and that the number of runway incursions of the sort that were described at Austin's airport and others have nearly doubled from 987 incursions. This is, in other words, these are planes that are on the runway that shouldn't be, that are almost hit, on takeoff or landing, those sort of things. It has gone from 987 to more than 1,700 incursions in spite of the widespread proliferation of advanced technologies. Now, we don't know if that's what happened over the skies of D.C. We don't, but there is a trend, and a trend in motion will tend to remain in motion for a while until it's rooted out. You can understand that, right?
Right. Well, what we saw in every industry in 2020 and 21 was a huge number of very talented, experienced people in every operational segment that lost their jobs because they wouldn't take the vaccine.
That's right.
That includes pilots and air traffic controllers.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a gigantic cadre of experienced people that got pulled out of those jobs because they wouldn't take the vax, that were replaced with people that were much less experienced.
But much more pliable politically. Yeah, isn't it true? Isn't that true? Isn't that way of looking at it? Yeah, they wouldn't take they wouldn't take the vax. They were replaced by people with less experience, but were more willing to take the jab. So,
correct.
Consider
correct.
The source.
They're willing to take the jab. But you got two flight crews. You got the flight crew on the commercial aircraft. You got the flight crew on the Black Hawk, and you got the air traffic controllers. Those are the three sets of human beings involved.
Yeah.
And President Trump is going to get to the bottom of this, and we're going to find out what. Unlike certain situations where you don't really know what happened, he's going to get to the bottom of this, and we're going to find out what happened.
Yeah. My gut, though, tells me that we're looking at mostly fault from the helicopter pilot. That's just saying, the crew. The helicopter crew is probably more involved on this.
They certainly had a lot more operational flexibility.
Yeah, and the airline pilot does not have the, I think he was only, 400 feet? But you're almost touching down, you know, at that point. There's not a lot of maneuver rule. And that's why those traffic avoidance systems that another caller was talking about earlier, they shut off when you're below 1,000 feet because you just don't have anywhere to go, really, a lot of times. You can't dive. No. You certainly can't. Well, I guess you could dive, but then you crash anyway, right?
Yeah. No, the air carrier's on a flight path that he cannot deviate from. He's literally on a rail. He can't move.
Yeah. That is the way that goes. Brad, appreciate it. Thanks for calling. 770-5633, Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Have at it.
Hey, guys, I'm Nick. .com.
You're hearing The Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED. Now Bill wants to hear from you. 541-770-5633. That's 770-KMED.
Delighted that you are here for Conspiracy Theory Thursday. I think this is David. Is this David? Good morning.
Good morning, Bill.
Go ahead, David.
Well, after Reagan passed, they decided to rename Washington National the Reagan Airport.
Right.
And there was talk back then about how planes had been going, I don't know where, in Maryland or Virginia or whatever. And even back then, there was talk that that airport, where it was and the amount of traffic, that it was already a hazardous airport. It was already too busy, too many planes stacked and too busy. So it's always been, at least for the past, you know.
It's been an accident waiting to happen, in other words, right?
Well, it's just some airports are more busy and more hazardous than others, you know. I mean, you get too many planes trying to get into the parking lot, and you're going to have a fender bender.
I think that's a realistic assessment of what's going on. Contrast Reagan with the Rogue Valley International Airport as an example. One of the things we like about it, yeah, there's traffic, but we don't have a plane coming in and going every 30, 45, 50 seconds like they do at Reagan.
No, but I'll tell you, if they were ever used, which it's not used that much, they also have control tower at Hillsborough. Now, imagine a lot of people say, I don't want to go to PDX. I want to go to Hillsborough and use it because there's less traffic, easier parking. Well, what would happen if PDX still stays this big with planes from Seattle and San Francisco and whatever coming in all the time, things from Japan. And suddenly Hillsborough with the plane, you know, every couple hours or something, you know what I mean? Like, not a big deal. All of a sudden, what if Hillsborough, well, I don't want to drive into PDX. I want to just go to Hillsborough. I can park and it's easy and stuff, right?
So you're thinking that it's kind of the equivalent, huh?
Well, what I'm saying is you got all those planes. What if PDX was still just as busy? And then Hillsborough becomes, everybody's trying to cram in there and stuff. It's just that maybe Washington National or Reagan Airport is, I'm old. So anyways, it's a long going thing. You can talk to
somebody. Yeah, for a long time it's been this way. They haven't had that many accidents though. It's it's a very convenient airport to go into if you're going to the swamp.
True. That's why.
Yeah, because you ever flown into Dulles?
I have not.
Okay, I've flown in there 2-3 times for various broadcasts. 3 hours most mornings to get from Dulles to Washington D.C. Even though it's not that far in miles, because of that's why the Congress critters flying to Reagan. Okay,
right. I understand, but I'm just saying. But this talk has been ongoing about how you know, this is dicey no matter what. So
Yeah, you're right. But life is inherently risky, though. I guess we just need to know. But I appreciate your perspective. I really do. You know, and it's really something when you look at the history of airline disasters, and one that comes to mind, and I don't know if you've ever read about this or kept up on it, but one that I studied for a while, and I was just it reminded me even last night, was Tenerife, the Tenerife aircraft disaster. That was the one in which two 747s back in 1977 were on the Tenerife Islands, and that's out of Spain, near Spain. And it was some miscommunication. There was a terror attack that day, and I have a friend, Mark, who lost many family members that day. Who we've talked about it, you know, off and on over the years, and when I read about Tenerife, and you find out how this was a small airport that got overloaded with a whole bunch of big aircraft because there had been a terror attack back in March of 1977. I forget exactly where, but they blew a bomb up at one of the airports where all the big planes were supposed to go. And a lot of planes were directed there, and then miscommunication. KLM ends up hitting a Pan Am. It's the one in which the KLM took off, and the Pan Am was trying to get off the runway, and then the KLM just took the roof off of the 747, and then off the Pan Am, and then both exploded in flames. Everybody died on KLM, and there were maybe 60 or so survivors from the Pan Am. But many Americans died from that. And you know, you see those things, it's human error. And it changed a lot about how airlines operate today and how airports operate when you look back at these things. And I'd imagine we'll learn from this one, too. That's the point I was trying to make. And like I said, I was just thinking, boy, you know, I remember Mark's story. He was telling me about this. And stuff happens. Life is inherently risky. And all I would say is that I'm just hoping that we learn from this and maybe get the helicopters in a different situation. I don't think they're going to close down Reagan International, and I don't think they necessarily should. It's always been known to be very crowded and a lot of conflicts there. That I guess that's where I'm going at.
Service is the difference with Sweetwater Sanitation. You're
7 KMED.
And this is KMED and KMED HD1 Eagle Point Medford, KVXG Ranch Pass. We'll extend the open phones here on Conspiracy Theory Thursday. You got a line open at 770-5633. We'll take it to 903. I think people are just wanting to talk a little bit about both airline safety, maybe about Jeff Golden and his constitutional amendment for a clean environment. You would be constitutionally guaranteed a clean and healthy environment. Well, I can see a lot of tyranny that we'd be driven through those loopholes. But Jim's here. Hello, Jim. How are you?
Good morning. Say, Bill, I just wanted to mention when congregation of aircraft is a good thing and it can work, and that was during the time when during 9/11 or just when 9/11 happened, we shut down our airspace.
Yes.
And the Icelanders really were the consummate hosts, and all these aircraft from all over Europe ended up there. And they just parked them all. It was like a parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
It was just amazing. And it was really, you know, a gem in a time that is very grim.
Do you think they learned from what had happened at Tenerife to, you know, to keep things straight? And because that's what happened with Tenerife. They had a terror attack, a bunch of planes landing there, a lot of fog also on the runway at that time.
Yeah. So anyway, I just want to throw that in there.
Okay. You know, yeah, there are good things too. There are good things too. And there are amazing miracles of planes that end up escaping destruction too. You read about that all the time.
Yeah.
Stuff can happen, right, Jim? Good or bad.
Yeah. All right, Bill.
All right. Let me go to Lucretia. Hey, Lucretia, how are you? You wanted to talk about the Jeff Golden constitutional amendment to guarantee a healthy and safe environment.
Yeah, I'm curious what he thinks is a safe and healthy environment.
I want to ask him next week, too, because he's talking about empowering state agencies to be much more rigorous. So he essentially, Jeff wants this, you know, the deep state completely controlling Oregon. So you have agency heads essentially making a policy, which is usually what has happened. So because could you see what would happen if under OHA, if OHA had the authority? Well, there's a constitutional guarantee of a safe and healthy environment. Well, a healthy environment doesn't come unless you take every vaccine that we tell you. Is that kind of where you're going with that?
Yeah, I'm saying no vaccines because we know it makes children sicker. I'd say no LED lighting, not on the street lights because it blinds you and it's really bad for all the wildlife.
Uh-huh.
But it also puts more dirty electricity and it costs more, actually, in the end. It costs you more.
Well, I'll tell you what we'll do. You know, we'll have to talk. Senator Golden has agreed to come on next week, all right? Why don't you send me a question or two that you'd like me to ask him? Because I want to ask him about this. This is a big deal, okay?
There's a bunch of stuff. No corn, you know, this ethanol stuff that's got all this glyphosate in it.
Hey, I'm with you on some of that, okay? All I'm saying is that write a question or two down because we really do need to ask Senator Golden about this because this is his baby, just like the fire map was, too, and we know how much fun everyone's having with that, all right? By the way, speaking of the – thank you, Lucretia. By the way, speaking of the fire map meeting, there is one tonight, 7 till 9 p.m., Josephine County Fairgrounds. And we're going to have I just wanted to make sure that you knew about this. And this is 7 till 9, 7 o'clock. And Bob Hart will be there. We also have Commissioner Ron Smith that will be there, a bunch of other people. And it's about getting appeals going and getting information out there. So if you want to go, it's a free public meeting. 7 o'clock tonight, Josephine County Fairgrounds. Joel's here. Hey, Joel, I got just a few seconds. Go ahead. What are you thinking?
Well, they say the amount of pollution from the L.A. fire is equivalent to all the cars on the West Coast emitting in a year.
Yeah.
Not to mention when all the electric cars burning down in the millionaire's garage took 3 days to put them out.
Yeah, but you have to understand, though, it's all for a good cause. You depopulate L.A. and you sell off the land, right? The land grab is on, okay? I'm just kidding with you, but maybe not. All right. Hi, good morning. Who's this? Welcome.
Brian Weldon.
Brian, what are you thinking?
Well, you know, it's Conspiracy Thursday, and you know, I'm a conspiracy monger.
Okay,
so,
I got 30 seconds, and it goes away,
right,
so give me a quick.
Last night on Truth Social, Trump talked about how this is absolutely ridiculous. There's no way that this Black Hawk helicopter should have been anywhere near the pathway of that airport. Then a few minutes later, Sean Hannity says they found four people alive.
No, he didn't say. They just said that they pulled persons, but apparently they weren't. But point well taken. We'll talk more tomorrow.